Well, hello, runners.
Welcome to the I Run Things podcast, the podcast for the everyday runner in search for that extra bit of motivation to get out there. My name is Susie, and I am your host. In this episode, which is episode 31, I bring you Joe Imas. And to be honest with you guys, I always seem to find the right words to put on my subject as a title for these episodes, and this one to me was really hard. Why was it hard? Joe just encompasses everything that I think every runner wants to find in their running. Joe is always excited to run another race. And he's been running 43 years. That's thousands of races. And yes, we are going to talk about some serious health challenges he overcame through running. But this podcast is not only about that. It's also about the joy of running, and I just hope this inspires you as much as it really inspired me. And this is a pretty long episode, so we're just gonna dig right in. Actually, I take that back. I need to clear something up. We mentioned during this conversation that Joe's next marathon will be the London Virtual Marathon. The reason for that is that I got serious issues editing this podcast, so I couldn't bring this to you till today. Joe did complete his London Marathon on October 4th. So congratulations, Joe. And now, yes, let's play Joe's interview. Hi, Joe. How are you?
I am terrific. How are you?
I'm good. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm looking forward to talking to you.
And you know, I always like people who have books and stuff in the background. Oh. I am obsessed.
Books and running books. It's like you never have enough running books.
You never have enough of them. For someone who doesn't have anything behind, I never have anything behind me. I always like when people have stuff. Especially books. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Okay, well, my name is Joe Imas. I've been running now for about 43 years. I'm a lawyer by trade. It's my law firm. Although I should say my wife is the senior partner of my law firm. Okay. Also a lawyer, priorities. I first started running in 1977. Got hooked on my first marathon in 1980. Wow. I believe back then I was technologically advanced because you were doing solo training almost like now with COVID, but I had a big yellow Walkman with two cassette tapes. So I was definitely ahead of the time technologically. And although I took about a 10-year break, I needed some things to heal up, but I've been running ever since. Just did my 40th marathon, which was a virtual one. My 39th was the last real one, if you can look at it that way. I've lost track of how many half marathons over 50 and races over 1,000. I have had the pleasure of finishing at the front of the pack, and I have been at the very back of the pack where I've been watching the police picking up the cones behind me. So all over the place. But right. It's the joy of running that I really like so much.
I like talking to all kinds of runners, but when someone has been running for 43 years, I mean, that's a ton of experience right there under your belt.
I've watched the different waves over time and the popularity. I have suffered through cotton shirts and shorts. No pleasure whatsoever.
I bet.
One of the first high tech that came in. Change running styles. You know, our initial style was very heel striking, tempo type runs all the time and you never stop. I'm going into my third decade now of using the walk, run, walk Chef Galloway method, which really has helped tremendously, especially through what I guess we'll talk about, some of my health challenges, made a huge difference in keeping me healthy and injury-free. So you know, you change and you adapt as time goes on, just like we're adapting to the circumstances right now.
Right. So let's talk about your health challenge.
Now, I'll give you the Reader's Digest story. Basically, it started in 2007, the first one I first noticed it. I was running the New York Marathon, and I was on First Avenue around mile 17. I would meet my wife, my daughter, Madison, my wife, Jolene, and my sister-in-law, Leslie. I'd meet them on First Avenue. But I was feeling really rough. You know, sometimes you have great races, and sometimes they're not so great. And I've always said, when you're having a not so great race, what you really got to do is focus on making the memories, meeting people, seeing things. You know, your time's out the window, fine. Let's enjoy every minute of this thing because you're still in it. Right. But by mile 17, I was having trouble breathing. It was really very rough. So when I met them, I said, you know, I've got to take a break. And I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to keep going, which I've never quit in a race. So we made a decision. I'd get a Diet Coke in this from this local Subway store. And no, there's no nutritional value to having a Diet Coke in the middle of a race. But I said, you know, I'll give it 15 minutes. I'll have the Coke. If I'm not feeling better, then I'm done. So I had the Coke. It made me feel a little bit better. Okay, fine. I'm gonna finish because I'm male, testosterone, and no brains. But my three girls decided that the only way I'd finish is if they stayed with me, which they did. You know, so I got myself to the finish line, and this was terrific. But my recovery, where normally you start day after day, you recover a little bit more, it was not going well. It turns out it had to be dealing with a heart condition, with blood flow issues and all of that. Went to see the doctors. They basically said what they tend to do is when they're seeing this, it's a type of scenario where when you've heard about an athlete that will pass away in the middle of a football game, what's really happening is their blood vessels, their ventricle closes up. And of course, they're gone. Sadly, they're gone. That's what I was experiencing. And they said there's a lot of things we can do to fix that, including some very invasive action. And they told me, you know, I'm sorry, but you'll probably never be able to run again. So my wife, of course, you know, was very concerned and very understanding. I said, honey, don't worry. Not only am I going to run again, but I've done 5 Boston marathons. I'm going to run my 6th Boston. And she did what every good wife does. That's nice, dear. Well, I started slowly but surely rehabbing. Had some very wonderful doctors that I told them I didn't want to have any operations. I wanted to rebuild, a little riskier, takes a lot more time, but willing to give it the time. And just like when you have to restart your training, everything's slow and steady. So over time, it started to feel better, started to get better, started to rebuild the heart, rebuild the blood circulation. Went into a half marathon, basically walking for the most part. Didn't care what my time was. It was just the greatest feeling in the world to be back in a race, just to be there. So I finished it off, and I started training more, and I'm pushing. And I'm watching my times come back to the old days. Not quite what I used to do when I was younger, but that didn't matter.
How old were you when you ran the New York City Marathon?
Yeah, with 2007, I would be 53 at that point.
Okay, so to me, you know, in my book, that's very young.
53. I love you. Oh, yeah. I'll be 66 in November. It's still going. So, in fact, I was supposed to do Tokyo in March. That was going to be my 6th major for my 6th star, but that'll happen probably in 2022. So over time, I started doing more races. Things were getting better. And then finally, I ran a race in Ottawa, Canada, where I'm calling you from now. I have 2 offices, one here and one in Florida. And I managed to do a 3:25 in the Ottawa Marathon and requalified for Boston. So, okay, we're getting there. This is the dream. I'm going to fulfill this dream. I'm going to get there. Well, my wife and I had arranged that we're going to fly into Boston. Everything's fine. A few days before I went to Boston, we went to see my doctor, and it turns out he had a diagnosis of cancer. It was a tumor, it was large, it was dangerous, and they had to get it out. And he said, you know, I'm sorry, but you know, this is, we determined to do laser surgery in order to expedite it. And he said, we'll try to get you scheduled as soon as possible. I said, well, before we do that, I have to run the Boston Marathon. And the look on his face was absolutely priceless.
I bet. I mean, that's got to be, especially when people are not runners, they don't get it. No. I feel like they can't understand.
They don't, it's like, this guy's crazy. We already know that. This is 2012. And I told told Jill, I said, I still want to go. I said, this is still the dream. I said, I'm going to finish. It doesn't care what it takes. I'm going to finish it. So we get to Boston. This is 2012. This is the year before the bomb. But it was incredibly hot. It was 30, 32 degrees Celsius. Boston's all hills, no shade. So it's quite challenging. And I know it's going to be. So the deal was I would stop at the medical tents. I'd get my blood pressure taken. I'd make sure I was okay. Started off that first little rolling downhill, and I realized by 10 kilometers, okay, it's too hot. I'm not doing any speed. This is it, slowing right down, but you're going to get it. And I would meet my wife and my daughter at different points along the course. That was a tradition we've had for many years, since actually going back to the 90s when I was doing the Disney marathons. My daughter at first would wonder what Daddy is doing. Then later she would be really excited because Daddy was really sweaty and has to give Mommy a hug. That was when you're a young girl, that's the thrill. But they've always been my pit crew. So they'll meet me there, they'll have a fresh shirt, they'll have something to drink, usually a Diet Coke. I've always had a Coke for every race. Don't ask me why. Even back in pictures of me back running marathons in the 80s, you'd see me at the end with a Coke. No reason, it's just crazy. But so I meet them at different points along the course. I met them just at the very top, finally, one of my meetings of Heartbreak Hill. And at that point, I said, at this point, even if I have to walk, I can get to the finish. I said, I'll meet you at the family meeting area, and I'm going to make it. Don't worry, I'm going to make it. So they took off and I started going at my slow turtle's pace at that point. Well, what I didn't know is, amazingly, they found by total happenstance a parking space at right near the 25-mile marker of the Boston Marathon as you're heading towards Boylston Street. And as I'm running, and I'm running is an exaggeration by that point at 25 miles, I see them like throwing their arms up in the air, and like, here we are. And I thought, oh my God, it's incredible. So the picture that when I sent you that I saw was actually taken at that point when they gave me a Diet Coke in hand. So they jumped in, they were bandits, they jumped in the race with me. And the greatest thrill with everything that I had to go through was I got to run with my wife and my daughter for the last mile, 365 yards of the marathon. We get to Boylston Street. My daughter at that point is a teenager, so she's got to take off because she's got to finish before everybody else. So I'm running in hand with my wife. We're not saying a word. We're just looking at, just taking in the whole atmosphere. We cross the finish line. We get through. I'm just staggering through getting the blankets and everything else. They put the medal around my neck. And then she looked at me, she gave me a big hug, looked up at me with those absolutely gorgeous brown eyes of hers and went, "You did it." And that moment when she said that, that said everything about what I think our sport is all about. It's not about the medals, even though you always never have enough medals and t-shirts, that's a family motto. But what it really is, it's that moment when the two of you actually accomplish something that was a dream. And you do it in a sense, even if she's not running with me, she's with me. You do it together. And when she said you did it, that was it. That was like the moment.
Oh my God, it's giving me the chills.
So it turns out I would have the operation. Fortunately, it was successful.
Where was the tumor, if I may ask?
It was prostate.
Okay.
They did not give me very good odds because it was okay. Very much. They expected, they thought for certain that the cancer would spread throughout. So it is a precautionary measure. I had a whole wonderful winter of radiation.
Oh my God.
Every day. So of course, we're crazy because while they were doing the radiation, they had something in Ottawa, Canada, where I was getting it called the Winterman Marathon. I'm in such pain anyway. Why not run and get a medal and a t-shirt for it? So I ran.
Being everywhere.
I, I ran the marathon and actually won my age category because anybody else my age was sensible enough to quit in the blizzard. But still finished. Of course, I didn't. My wife wasn't there for that one because I didn't quite tell her till afterwards because she would have killed me beforehand.
Oh my God! But that's amazing that you won your age group through radiation.
Well, you're in such pain anyway. What's the difference?
You might as well. Oh my God!
So I've run many races since then. The challenging part is the cancer has come back, but very, very microscopic. So I'm fighting again. I will win. You know, it's so far me too, cancer zero. We're going to keep that. but it's the memories and everything that you make, fighting it, finishing it, and going on, and then doing other races literally all over the world.
So what other races let's go back a little bit. So you went through radiation. When did they clear you? When did they say?
So once the radiation was done, I was cleared. And okay. At that point, they checked my levels were down. But they said, look, it can recur anytime. And I was aware of that. And I've certainly always been cognizant of it. And it was last year where it came back again. But as I said, it's microscopic. And apparently, I've been reading that because I continue to run at the same crazy level and continue to push ahead, in essence, helps the body hold back the cancer. So right now, we're in a watch and wait. God willing, I've been watching wait for 10 years, then, you know, best case scenarios, and we'll keep fighting it as long as we go, but at least we're on top of it.
Right. So, is the recurrence in the same place or is it in a different spot?
No. It's what it is. This is remnants of that tumor that they're actually determining exactly where it is. We've got an idea, but where it sort of, you know, found itself a home temporarily. But it's there. We know it's there. We're watching it. It took a bone scan to even find out, consequently where it could be. So I know what I'm dealing with.
Right.
And it doesn't really adversely impact me that way. If anything, it motivates me. You know, it's like live life every day, enjoy everything you have. You know, and I always say when you run races, you make memories. I think the best races, the most enjoyable races I've had, are not the ones where I've been fortunate to win medals or win trophies or whatever. It's the ones where maybe I've struggled, maybe other circumstances have occurred, but I've met some great people. I've heard some wonderful stories. It makes such a difference.
Right. And it's the memories that I remember the most from my races are when I was in real pain, like my two marathons. I remember vividly. So my first marathon was awful because I was dehydrated.
Which one was that?
I did Marine Corps Marathon.
Oh, I did Marine Corps in 94. Got to run with Oprah. Yay.
Oh, that's good. So fun. Oprah wasn't in mind.
No, those are only.
Mine was so hot. Oh my God. I was very dehydrated. And when I didn't think I was going to finish. So I was texting my husband and my son. We were in a group chat.
Right.
And I told my husband, I don't think I can finish this. And he said, which mile marker are you on? And I said, I'm on 23. And he was like, come on, baby, you're 23.
Right. You're not a Hens Park, you're heading towards Yojima, you can make it.
Oh my God. But it was funny because when I read it on the phone and I was walking, so I was texting my husband back and forth because I was walking. So I read, come on, that's 23. Like, I could see his face saying, you're almost there. Like,
yeah, it's like those signs, like people who yell at you at 23 miles, you're looking good and you're almost there. Right.
Right. Well, it was, you know, those 3 miles, 3.2 is just the worst. But I remember he texted me again and he said, we are under the flag that says 26. And I walked because I knew I couldn't run anymore, but I was like, okay, when I see the flag, because my son is going to see me, I'm just going to start sprinting because I didn't want him to see me walking. That was all that it was in my mind. I was like, my son's not going to see me walking.
That's it, yeah.
I saw the flag with the 26 and then I just started running as fast as I could. And my son took video because he thought, well, mom is going to want to see herself crossing the finish line. And you see me going, I'm going so slow. Like in my mind, I was sprinting, but I was going so slow. But that's what I remember the most. how much in pain it was and how I pulled myself through, you know, it was.
You pulled yourself together to do it. And that's really, that's the part that makes it so special. Although I confess my most unusual finish, I ran the Medoc Marathon in Bordeaux in France.
Okay.
And that's kind of a fun one because you dress in costumes. Of course, I freaked my wife out because I ran as Pheidippides, the first Greek runner that died of a heart attack.
I thought
it was appropriate. You know, I thought it was funny. But it's a challenging race in the sense it's mostly hills. You're running in the vineyards of Bordeaux. It's dirt and rocks, basically, on the dirt roads. But you stop at the 23 different chateaus in Bordeaux, and they serve wine, and they serve, they serve water, and they serve Gatorade, but they also serve their best wines. They compete. And more often, bread, oysters, baguettes, later on, steak, ice cream.
Oh, my God.
I think after I finished the race, I actually looked at my watch, and I burned 3,300 calories. However, I estimate that I ate about 5,000, so it was kind of a negative split, you know. But the one thing they do, because they realize, they call it the world's longest race for a good reason, because you can be on the race course the entire time. You're not really in a rush to finish. But what they do is at the finish line, they actually have a big gate that they close up. So if you finish in, you know, either 6.5 or 7 hours, depending on the weather, this was hot weather, they'll do it in 7 hours. If you finish at 7 hours and 1 second, you can't get across the finish line. You've done the whole race, no credit for it at all. So I'm running, I made a mistake at the Chateau de Rothschild because I am not a drinker, but I had a little more wine than I should have. So I'm feeling pretty good and I'm starting to dance in the streets. I'm having a good time. So I have this little extra wine. And then I realized, I looked at my watch. I said, oh my God, I've just thrown up my time completely off. So I start going from there. And of course, you know, it's brutal. It's hot. It's tough weather. And it's knocking you down piece by piece. You know, and I get to the 38 kilometer mark. And I looked at my watch. I thought, oh my, I'm not going to make it. So I thought, okay, let's figure it out. How fast I've got to go to get to the finish line on time. I knew my wife would see me around just after 40 kilometers. That was the next place we were going to meet. And she jokes around that she actually ran, and she did by her watch, a half marathon running around Bordeaux to places to meet, to find places to meet me. But she met me just after 40. I figured, okay, if I get to 40 and I collapse, somebody knows me. So I'm okay. I get to 40, I realize I'm still really tough time-wise. It's really, really tight. So Jill realizes exactly what's going on here. So she's running ahead of me. And we're keeping an eye on the watch. We come around the corner and we see, you know, the usual big arch balloon they have for the finish line? They're deflating it. This did not feel good. So Jill is running ahead saying, don't, you know. I'm running, and there's huge crowds there because they always like to watch these last minute crazy runners that are trying to get in under the wire. So I dash as hard as I can. I give it everything I've got. I get under the balloon. It's just like a few inches above my head. I stop and I throw my arms up in the air and I said, yes, I made it. And so my wife kindly patted me on the shoulder and said, honey, it's 100 meters down here. I hadn't hit the finish line yet. So you know how you are at the end of a race, you're so, everything stiffens up as soon as you stop. I had to pick up and take off at that point. I had 32 seconds left to spare to get across the finish. Just made it. You know, so that was my craziest finish. You know, but I finished. There's actually two other people behind me, amazingly enough.
They made it.
Now the people behind them, there's like a couple of thousand that didn't make it after that, but they're probably lying there on the road drunk and very happy.
But without a medal.
but you know, I you were talking before, I do give lectures on running to a number of people at different times, up in Ottawa, in the Running Room, for example, or down south. And what I really enjoy is kind of sharing the beauty of the sport, the fact that we all really help each other out. And that's not only runners, but spectators. I was doing a couple of races in Tromsø, Norway, which is 400 kilometers north of the Arctic Circle. It was the Midnight Sun races. And my wife was running with me in the 10K. Now, she hadn't really trained for the 10K, but she is stubborn and tough. She puts up with me, so she has to be. we're running the 10K. We're heading back towards the finish, but It's a tough race. The winds are bitter cold. It's windy. And even though you've got the 24-hour sunshine, it is a very challenging course. And she was running out of steam. I mean, she was really struggling. We crest over this one hill, and she's coming down, and I can just see she's almost ready to drop. This one lady must have seen her coming, who's just sitting with this one, very few spectators, but one of them on the side streets, saw her, pulled something out of her purse, which was the equivalent of a Kit Kat, and made a point of going over to my wife, opening up and offering her her chocolate, just to get Jill, to keep her going, get her spirits up. The joy that I saw both in my wife's face and in the face of the spectator who took the time to see somebody that was struggling to help tells me everything. I mean, this is really what it's about. You know, and I was so proud of Jill to be able to finish. She got herself together and she did finish it, and I'd run the half marathon later on. But it says so much about our sport, the way we tend to work together. Another good memory that I have is in the Rome Marathon. I was a little towards the back of the pack there because I decided to check out to see if I could fly on the cobblestones, and I couldn't. I did a perfect half gainer onto the cobblestones. So I'm past the 30-kilometer mark now in Rome. And as you do in many races, you find people that you meet and you start talking and you sort of run together and you'll be with them for a while and not with them for a while. And this young lady from South Africa I was running with was very sweet. We were having a nice conversation. As we turned this one corner, to her right was another young runner who was clearly really struggling. And the lady who was with me turned to me and says, "I hope you don't mind." She says, "But I've got to check out and make sure she's okay." Now, if you think about it, you're in the middle of a marathon, and you don't know how many people have done or that, but it's really a thrilling thing to be in Rome and running a marathon.
Right.
But suddenly your mind is strictly focused on that one person who's struggling that you see off to the side. So the two of us went over. That poor girl was, was struggling. She went out hard and she was struggling. My South African friend pulled out a bag of gummies and gave her some gummies to chew on. Said, "Why don't you come run with us?" And we started running, the three of us together, much slower, to make sure this girl could keep up until she got her legs back together. And for a couple of miles, we actually stuck it out together, but it showed the camaraderie that in the middle of the race, the most important thing with everything else going on were the three of us getting together and encouraging each other. Now, we would encourage each other. We would eventually break up. I would take off and I would finish the race, and so would they. But it shows the real spirit underlying our sport and what we do. And I think back of all the races, the thousands some odd races I've done, I can remember the finish lines. I remember the medals, and I have the 5 gazillion medals. That's always fun. But it's those memories, those people that you meet, those circumstances that occur.
Maybe.
That's what you will always remember. When I remember a particular race, I remember that circumstance, not necessarily the finish, not anything else, but those circumstances that really make a difference.
Right. And there's a psychological theory that says that human beings, because of evolution, we really just tend to focus on the positive. So we forget about the negative things that happen. So when we're in pain so that's the reason why people keep running marathons, because of that feeling at the end, how it makes you feel.
Yes.
You forget about all the pain. Yeah. You just remember how it made you feel.
It's the challenge, whether it's Berlin or London, you also do things to, you don't do things that are so serious that you forget to enjoy the experience itself. And I've seen runners too often that are just so focused, and it's good to be focused in a race, certainly. You've got to be very aware of your body, everything going on, but you've got to remember that you're not from Kenya, so you're not going to win, so don't worry. Relax, enjoy, but keep those memories that are going on and have fun with it. And sometimes you can do things that are a little wacky, but just to keep you going, it makes a difference. Another example that I had in the London Marathon, I was at about the 27-kilometer mark, and with any race, and this is whether it's a 5K, 10K, half, or a whole, you always have a bit of a down point. know, when you're going. And that's inevitable. So you almost have to prepare for it, know it's going to be there, and find ways to get yourself through it, because you've been through this before. You'll make it through again and you'll be fine. Other runners will always help you with that. Other people will help you with that. But I had hit 27. I'd hit a bit of a down point. We're in Kennery Row. We're coming around a very tight corner, you know, and I'm trying to think how to get myself psyched up again, because I know I've got to get through this point. I don't want to lose my pace. I don't want to lose what I'm doing. Well, as we're crossing, you know, of course, you know, London has like over 1 million spectators. Well, across the road, a family had taken, I guess, their family dining table downstairs. And even though the runners were quite a ways away on the corner, they were actually toasting them with champagne as they were going by and cheering. I thought, that looks good. So I pulled off the course. I went up and I asked them if I could have some champagne. They said, of course. So they actually pulled up a little refrigerator that they had. They pulled out a frozen flute. They poured me some champagne. We said cheers. And then there was this one lady with a older lady with a flowery hat on. And I pointed to my cheek. I said, if you give me a kiss, I'll finish. She says, of course. And she, big, huge smile, gives me a kiss on the cheek. She goes, cheerio. And I go, ta-ta for now. I took off. I felt so wired and so great. It was like I was starting the race all over again. And these are the things that will make the memories that will carry you on and keep you going. Yeah, and it makes a difference.
Right. What is your favorite race that you've done? I'm sure you have very memorable ones, but is there one that stands out?
Well, Boston is still my favorite. I've had to pick which one of the Bostons I've done. The 9600th running was quite incredible, because I finished a little over 4 hours in there. There were 38,600 people who actually managed to get into Boston by time, which was so unusual. It was different than my first Boston. My first Boston, the only time limit was 2 hours and 50 minutes. I managed to get in on a 2:49:53, like just, you know, my qualifying time.
That's incredible.
But for the 100th running, it was so unusual, because even at the pace I was going, it was almost as if I was at the start all the way through. There were people around me the entire time. But the atmosphere was just electric all the way through. You know, every town, of course, was out. Everybody was out celebrating. This was the big race. And we were deathly afraid of the weather, because the day before we had horrendous storms. They were predicting more, and there should certainly would be the day after. But the day of the race, it's like the running gods came out and gave us a beautiful running day. And it made, you know, I wasn't worried about what my finishing time was. I wasn't even thinking about that. I was just enjoying every single minute. It was just such a thrill to be there, you know, at that point. So that I still have to say that's probably still my favorite of all of them.
And is the marathon the distance that you like the most?
I think it's the one I've always enjoyed the most because of the challenge to it. But every race has its own special, you know, notion to it. One of my favorites is you're in Toronto, right?
I'm in Pennsylvania.
Oh, in Pennsylvania? I thought you were in Toronto. Okay.
No. I wish I was. I love Toronto. I think it's I love Toronto, but not Pennsylvania.
One of my favorite races that is totally off the wall. It's an 8-kilometer race. It's in a little town called Perth, Ontario.
Okay.
And I've run it a number of years, but a few years ago, they actually set the world record for the most amount of people running a race in traditional Scottish kilts.
Oh my God. That sounds so much fun.
on top of that, I mean, it runs it through the town. It's you have bagpipes beforehand. You have Scottish games beforehand. Now, they had 4,500 that ran, I believe it was the amount that actually ran in kilts, my wife included. But of those, they had 50 men and 50 women that were really crazy, because what they did is they went as warriors. So they had a sword and a shield. And I've got all the blue face paint. I look like Braveheart without the Mel Gibson attitude, like Braveheart with a sword and the shield. And you do tasks, you know, to save one of them, for example, you have to cross the big river, which is actually a pond, and you walk across and get soaked, and you save the princess by having a quick glass of whiskey and take off. It's all in fun. It's all completely in fun all the way through. It's a blast. So it's not a marathon, it's not challenging that way, but it's pure fun. These are the fun races that you want to do.
Right.
And again, so memories.
Yeah, you mentioned Disney World, like the races, when, because obviously they're super popular, but you mentioned you run them way back when.
Way back when, I did the first Disney in 1994.
Oh, wow.
That's when the course actually deviated. It actually went by a garbage dump. They, needless to say, changed the course after that. We didn't have Wide World of Sports then. We didn't have Animal Kingdom. It wasn't built yet. The medal was pretty awesome. It was still the Disney, you know, Disney years. But living in Florida, my other office is in Florida, so it wasn't too far away. You know, so I've done a number of Disney races over time. And Disney is fun. I mean, that's, again, you go into it just for the complete fun of it. And it's typical Disney. You start off in Epcot, incredible highlight. Then you run on a long, boring feeder road. It's like waiting in line. Then incredible Magic Kingdom, incredible highlight. Long, boring feeder road, Animal Kingdom. But it is extremely well organized. One of the more humorous things I remember in one of the first years I did it is they introduced this new sports supplement called Goo. This is when, before we had the bars and everything else, nobody told us how to use the packets. So they were handing out, and they only had vanilla and chocolate back then. So they were handing out the Goo packets. So of course you take the packet, you rip it off. Now we didn't know you had to have it with water. So people were like downing the whole thing. Oh my God, the looks on people's faces of such sickness. Till unless we got water, managed to get water in us afterwards. But live and learn. But at least, Disney was always ahead of the game. And I will tell you, they're very well organized. They had kids races beforehand. And my daughter would always compete in that. And I remember one year that she made me very proud as a runner, because she was 6 or 7 years old, but it was the girls' race. And they, what they do is they have, Corella DeVille was the race director. They had, my daughter had the privilege of being, and if she hears this, she'll kill me, but she won the first ever diaper dash at Disney World.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
Disney. Yeah, she was really cool. But she ran this race, and she's probably towards the front part of the pack, and to her right, this poor little girl fell. My daughter stopped, turned around, and went back to help the girl up and help her finish. I was so proud of what she was doing, because what she did to me was the real winner, because that's right. that is what it's really all about. That's the lessons you really want to give. And that's a lot of what our running is lessons that we're teaching our children. The tenacity, never give up. Long term, that nothing's going to be short term. You've got to really work for something, but it's certainly worth it. And the thrill of achieving something after a long bit of training and working through it. And the care for other people. When we run, we care about everybody else we run with and our fellow runners. And I think that makes a huge difference.
So what are your plans for?
Well,
are things in Ontario with COVID?
Well, I'm up here. The other option is Florida. I can't, right now, getting to Florida, traveling is very dangerous. At my age, with my immune system, with my health issues, right? So running up here, Ottawa happens to be a beautiful city. It's very, very green, lots of places to run, wide open. I'm doing virtual races. I ran a virtual marathon this summer. And the advantage of running the virtual marathons, I pick the course, I pick the weather. So it's not like the times I've gone out and run in hail, I've run in blizzards, I've run in the worst. I did Berlin in the rain when it ran last year. My next one is London in 2 weeks, October 4th. I'm doing the virtual London Marathon. It's just, the races really are, they're an excuse. I mean, they're motivating, and certainly we want to do them in, like I say, medals and t-shirts, but really it's the training that you keep doing. And sharing, our friends get together on Zoom. One of my friends, Lynn, has developed a group where she's instructing. So we get together by Zoom every week. So we all keep in touch that way. And it really keeps the camaraderie going. It keeps the spirit going and the enthusiasm. And the races, I love them, but they really are the excuse to get there. It's that, they always joke about the journey being the most important thing. It really is. The journey makes the
difference. Yes, it's the journey, not the destination.
Always. Yeah. And you learn so much, and you you meet the most wonderful people, you know, and you experience so much together when you're, you know, going for the same basic goal. And you see a lot of the caring and the spirit, again, you mentioned the spirit of the marathon, but it's so true. You see that spirit all the way through, even in tough times like this. So I'll be doing virtual races for a while. I may do the Mount Washington Road Race, which is, I always joke, it's a one hill race. It goes from the base of Mount Washington to the top. So it's only one hill, just one hill. That's it.
It's just a super long one.
Yeah, it's not going to be very long, very steep, you know. I'll probably do, you have an option. We're going to find out in October for certain, but I'll probably do Tokyo for my sixth star, God willing, in 2022, if all goes well. And who knows after that? You know, it's just, there's always something on the horizon. When it gets to the point where, whether it's by health or by age or whatever the case is, I can't do marathons anymore, I'll do halves, I'll do tens, I'll do fives, I'll walk. Doesn't matter. It's the fun of doing it that really makes the difference.
So you mentioned your wife a couple of times. Does she run with you now? Or I am imagining you didn't keep in touch with your first doctor who told you you're never going to run again.
No, if I ever do, I just want to show him the medal and say, see?
An interesting conversation, you know, saying, do you remember when you told me? Yeah, about that.
Now my doctors, they don't even bother questioning whether I'm going to run. They just nod their head and say, yeah, okay, if you're going to do it, here's what you need to do. You know, they already know. They're very, very good. I'm very grateful for it. They understand the nature of what I'm going to do. My poor wife understands that too, because she would love to have a vacation one day where we actually don't have a race. And even there was one point when we finally got this, got this organized. So my wife and my daughter love horseback riding. So we got a dude ranch in Georgia, and we're going to go to a dude ranch for a week. That was pretty good. When I'm on a horse, I look like Billy Crystal on a bad day. Okay? The horse kind of looks at me and says, are you kidding? But I would try it, because you always try things. I love river rafting. I like mountain climbing. I always try things. I don't hesitate. But after my first try, I thought, you know what? I'm going to go running during the day instead of going horseback riding, which I did. In the meantime, my wife is in the main lodge, and she sees this poster, and she gets really excited. She brings it back to the room. It turns out once a year in Madison, Georgia, they have a 5-kilometer race. Yes! My daughter's name is Madison. So we actually ran Madison in Madison on that trip. So we still had a race. Great.
That's awesome. Always looking for that opportunity. That's wonderful.
You never know what's going to show up at what time. So you always have to grab the opportunity. It doesn't come around again.
Yeah, that's a great motto to have in life. Grab the opportunity.
It is. We only have a short time here in reality. And I know that's an old saying, but it's very true. You know, and these chances to do things, whether, you know, whitewater rafting. I took my daughter that way. And I remember the movie Deliverance. We actually ran those rapids. I've done that a few times. You know, getting experiences like that, you don't get that chance. And sometimes it's scary. A week ago, I ran in Gatineau in Quebec. And sure enough, as I'm running, I'm looking up, and there's this huge black bear.
Oh, wow. So
the two things I thought is, first, I know if a black bear approaches you, they're really more vegetarians than anything else. You make a lot of noise and you back off. The second thing, I'm looking around to see if there's another runner and hoping they're slower than I am. So you think about your priorities.
You're too funny.
I ran across a snake when I was in Georgia. I've seen deer that have jumped in front of me. You know, I've stared down a fox one point when I was running. All things happen, but you don't freak out. You just allow it to happen and you deal with it as it comes along. You know, injuries. I always joke, if somebody asks me where I've been injured, I start singing Head, Shoulders, Knees, and Toes, because that's probably where I've been injured at some point or another in my life. Yeah. But even that 2015 race that I did in Bermuda, I had some knee problem at the time. I tore a bit of my meniscus, so I would get it operated on, but I had a knee brace on. And in my second loop, I was on the far side of the island at the time, before I had gotten to the point where they give you the rum swizzle, which is kind of fun. But I'm running by, and I passed these two gentlemen at one point, and I knew they were British because of the comments they made. One of them looks over at me and sees me running by him on a very straight, you know, gait at that point before I take my walk break, and he goes, "Oh no, I can't believe the GIMP passed us." I think, yes, and I'm going to beat you to the finish line too. Little did I know, of course, there was a woman in an army t-shirt that would beat me there, but okay. But you remember those things, you know, and it's just, it's fun. But what I also remember from 2015, that there was a gentleman there who was handing out toffees, English toffees, right after the end of the first half. He was actually just on the road, just casually. He just had a box of, he made homemade toffees and was giving out to runners. He was so happy to be able to help people and give them out. His smile, I still remember. That was such a joy to see. It just boosted me right up heading into the second half of the race. So those are the memories you make.
I would like for, because I know you give motivational speeches. Do you do that only in Canada or do you do that in the United States too?
It's pretty much been in Canada, but I can, you know, it's wherever anybody asks. And I don't, it's something I volunteer. I mean, like anything okay. else, you know, it's, as an attorney, for example, I did pro bono work for children. You do things because if you're fortunate enough to be able to have the opportunity to participate in something like this or have the chance to do things, whether it's in my career right. or in my running, it's great to give back and have fun with it and be able to hopefully get other people motivated in the same way. And I'm a marathon runner by habit, but every race matters. Every race is equally as exciting, whether it's, like I mentioned, 5, 10, half, whole distance. The ultra marathon is just blow me totally away. It's just the excitement, be able to express and share the excitement of it more than anything else.
Right. So for people, in case someone's interested in talking to you, where can they find you?
I'll give you my email address.
Okay.
It's long, so if they're going to write, listening to this and writing it down.
I can put it below.
I'll put it below.
I'll put it below. And
you're more than welcome. More than welcome to get in touch with me, and even just to chat, just to discuss or talk about, you know, the Galloway method, for example, that I use, or talk about what trainings that I do or the things that have worked and things that haven't worked. I have made more than enough mistakes. You learn so much from your mistakes. I'm very good at making mistakes, but you learn from them and you grow from that.
Right.
You know, and sometimes you have fun with it. I ran a race in Jamaica one time where I couldn't understand why the atmosphere was so sweet till I realized the fact that taxi cab drivers were sitting on their VW smoking ganj while we were running by. You know? And they were great. They were playing the most fabulous Bob Marley music. It really got you psyched up for your run. It was terrific. So you never know what you're going to what's going to happen.
Very nice. This was awesome, Joe. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed having you.
Susie, it was a pleasure meeting you and a pleasure talking to you.
It's my pleasure. The pleasure is all mine.
And I always finish off with saying cool runnings, because due to Jamaica, that's been my saying for a long time. So, you know, cool runnings, Mom, cool runnings.
Thank you so much, Joe.
My pleasure. Take care and nice talking to you.
Nice talking to you. Bye. Bye-bye.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this interview with Joe Imas. His email address will be in the show notes below, as well as the links to our other social media platforms. Don't forget to follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And if you could leave a review on your favorite podcast platform, that would be very much appreciated. That helps our content get in front of other people who may be interested in listening to conversations like this one. With that, run fearless, you guys.